It's something involving wherever they come. The world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, Nicole Sandler back with you for round two of our nightly get-together. The phone number is 866-303-2270 if you want to join in that way. We've also got a little chat going on. To get to the chat room, you can either go to tomhartman.com and click on chat or go to my blog, radioornot.com. There's a link that'll get you right in there. You just have to register. It's all free, and you can join in the chat. All right, in the first hour, I had the interview with Congressman Rob Andrews from New Jersey talking about the health care bill that he was one of the authors of. And again, I brought it all back home because I told him the story of what I dealt with today. The fact that my daughter's now former insurance company canceled her on December 31st. The only way I found out about it was today when I was trying to find out why my most recent payment to them wasn't credited to the account, and then I was informed that she's been without coverage for 6 months. Lovely. All right. While I was on hold with the insurance company, I'm sitting at the computer, you know, doing my regular reading, and one of my regular haunts online is buzzflash.com, and I was intrigued by a headline, 50-year-olds are unemployable without a public option. Well, great, because, here I am. Thankfully, Air America is employing me on a week-to-week basis, but still employing me. But I will turn 50 in November. Just happens to be the same month my Cobra will run out. And I'm wondering how the hell I'm ever going to get insured again. I've got a couple of those so-called pre-existing conditions. So I read this article, and it's actually a guest commentary on BuzzFlash written by a guy named Steve Corrick, and it made so much sense. Scary, but it made so much sense. So I scrolled down to the bottom to see if there was an email address or anything, and there wasn't, but it did say, BuzzFlash guest commentary. Steve Corrick is a Montana realtor, verified voting and climate change activist, and 56-year-old who, like most members of his generation, desperately needs better insurance option. So with a little help from Google, I tracked Steve Corrick down, got him on the phone, and asked him to join me on the air tonight. And I'm happy to say he agreed, and there he is. Hi, Steve. Welcome to Air America Radio.
Well, thank you, Nicole. It's a real pleasure. You used, as the congressman wanted to say, you used the Google wonderfully.
I did use the Google wonderfully, yes. Before I even called you, I shared your column, your commentary, your opinion here on Facebook, and immediately people started racking up the comments because it's hitting home. Basically, well, talk about it. You have a friend with these great credentials. This is how you lead off the piece. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I became very sensitized to this myself a couple years ago. About 3 years ago, I was working for a large national company, and I'd already noticed that the 50-year-olds were kind of dropping off, and I was in that age range. And I'd done very well with them. I'd been one of their regional sales leaders the year before, and then I had my third 2-day absence, and this one I ended up in hospital, and I couldn't, you know, kind of keep that under I couldn't hide my cards on that one, and they knew about it. And when I got back, and I was pretty messed up for a couple weeks afterwards, instead of, you know, kind of, geez, you know, sorry you were sick and hope you feel better and, you know, we're glad to have you back, all of a sudden, all the stuff that I'd been doing for years suddenly not only was not okay, but I was getting written up for it. And this was really weird to me because I'd been a very dedicated and long-time employee. And that just continued. And, you know, the same things that the year before I'd been getting awards for, this year suddenly were not only not okay, they were a basis for being written up. And about 4 months later, I was out of a job. And I started to think about it at that point, and I realized that three or four other employees of the same company who were in the same age range had also disappeared off the rosters. Another guy in another store who had, wonderful technical expertise and a long roster of customers and all kinds of sales awards had suddenly quit working for the company about 5 or 6 months after it was discovered that he was going to need a hip replacement. And I started really looking into this and thinking about this, and what I realized is that with this company and with a lot of other companies, basically they want to hire you until your first major medical incident, and then you are no longer of interest to them. And and frankly, there's a reason for that, which is that anybody who has a major medical condition, and sort of by definition every 50-year-old has a pre-existing condition of some kind or another, you're cranking their insurance through the roof. So this friend of mine is 56 years old. She's got a master's degree. She worked in a major university in the financial department for 18 years. She's always been a wonderful employee, is always on time. Her last job, she never missed a day in a year and a half. And when she goes to apply for a job, they always say, gee, we love your credentials. And then by the end of the training period, there's this kind of awkward thing that happens, which is, gee, we don't think you're quite right for the job. Your expertise isn't quite what we were looking for. Boy, you were so close, but just wasn't quite right. I think maybe this job's a little too stressful for you. And what it is that, like the rest of us, she has a pre-existing medical condition. And that means that if they did hire her, then the insurance premium for all of the members of that company would go up dramatically.
But do they know? Is that a legal question to ask in a job interview? Do they know she has a pre-existing medical condition, or just figure because she's 56, she probably does?
What happens is it happens one of two ways, as I understand it, and I'm not an expert. I'm just kind of looking at the consequences through
right.
this kind of foggy window. So I can't say that I'm 100% accurate on this, but what I know is that there's very few 50-year-olds working for a lot of these national corporations, and it seems to be concomitant with the fact that they have these medical conditions. But there's a couple things that happen. If you work for a company for a few months, often they'll have a 3 to 6 month trial period.
Right.
And if you're on pharmaceuticals or you have any kind of medical treatment during that time, then obviously that will be reported back to the company, and suddenly they're going, why are they taking this high blood pressure medication? Why are they taking, whatever it is, an anti-anxiety medication? Why are they taking this or that? And immediately there's that concern.
Yeah.
This
whole system we have where our health care is tied to our employers is ridiculous. Our employers should have nothing to do with the health care we get or the illnesses we have, except when you have to miss a day of work because you're sick. You bring this up, and I'm sure it had nothing to do with it. But, gee, in the 6 months before I lost my job, I was hospitalized with pneumonia for 5 days, and I had a malignant melanoma. It's food for thought,
Yeah, and it's food for thought that basically every 50-year-old gets to chew on eventually.
Uh-huh.
And this is the reality. And from a company perspective, you can understand this. They're pushed to the maximum to create these quarterly profit, meet these quarterly profit expectations, and having one or two older employees, cranking up health care costs for everybody is a tremendous strain. And the other example I gave in the article, which is amazing, I worked for a short time for a unionized health insurance or a life insurance company.
Okay.
And they had like 2,300 employees. They had 5 employees in their 50s with cancer, and they kept them on their insurance plan because they were a good company and they were trying to take care of their people. But those 5 employees with cancer meant that the average insurance premium for every single one of their 2,300 employees was $800 a month. And so they just offered a monthly payment to everybody else, because obviously your everyday employee couldn't afford $800 a month for insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the catch-22 that the companies are caught in. And, of course, this is one of the reasons why, at least with the rest of the Western world, we are not competitive. It's one of the reasons why American car companies choose to put their new plants in Canada, because they know that even though the hourly wage will be equivalent to what they're paying in the United States, they're not going to have the additional pressure of the health care costs, and they're not going to have the pressure of health care costs when those people retire and they have to carry those forward. And, you know, I mean, we've just seen GM, you know, go out of business exactly for this reason, because their health care premiums and their health care costs became so overwhelming to the overall ability of the company to generate money that they couldn't stay in business. And, of course, what happens when the company goes bankrupt is they immediately let go of all those health care obligations, and then all of their longtime employees and all of their retirees are no longer covered by health care and are back on the government dole in order to have their health care costs met. So it's kind of like, you know, the you can pay me now or pay me later situation that Midas Muffler used to talk about, because we can either ignore these costs that are inherently going to come in everybody's life if they live long enough, and pretend that somehow that is helping the bottom line, and in the short term it does. But in the long term, it hurts American companies' competitiveness. It shortens the working careers of an awful lot of people by many, many years, 10 to 15 to 20 years of the, what should be their best, you know, highest wage earning years, and when they should be contributing the most to Social Security, they've been laid off by some company and then they can't get another job even though they have a tremendous work record and tremendous experience because of this healthcare problem that nobody's talking about.
Right. All right. Steve Corrick is with us. His piece is on buzzflash.com. There's a link to it from my blog at radioornot.com and my page at airamerica.com. We're going to take a break and come back on the other side and talk about what you go into. You just gave the background, basically. So when we come back, let's talk about what you wrote. With no insurance, here's what unemployed workers of, say, our age can do. And then problems inherent in the system without a public option, and then what we could expect if we do get a public option. And there is a light at the end of the tunnel there. And it is Steve Corrick with me, Nicole Sandler, on Your America Radio. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
You know, somehow, 40 years ago, when man was walking on the moon, we had doctors who did health house calls. And I don't recall, I mean, yeah, granted, I was only 9 years old, but I don't remember health insurance being an issue. Well, it certainly is now. Steve Corrick is with us. He's got a piece on BuzzFlash.com today entitled 50-Year-Olds Are Unemployable Without a Public Option. And, Steve, you hit it just spot on there. So let's talk about what you wrote. With no insurance, unemployed workers can, and you gave six options.
Yeah, well, there are very few options. I mean, I think, yeah, honestly, there's one more I'd add, which is they can go out and beat their head against the wall for about a year and a half until they give up looking for work, because they walk in with the lead set of credentials to all these jobs, and somehow they just don't ever make it, you know, in many cases through the final interview. I have just one friend, for instance, who's worked for telecommunication companies for over 30 years, who went to apply for a local call center here that's just come into my hometown of Missoula, Montana, and she's 60-ish and overweight, and she never could get an interview with him, even though she's, you know, had a tremendous career in telecommunications and as an operator, and they finally just said, you know, don't come back. We don't have to tell you why we don't want you to come back, but just don't come back because we're not going to hire you. And
why
would that be? Well, you know, what is there except for the health care cost? Because besides that, she's got every credential they could possibly want in that position.
Yep. So the options you give are really not options. You give retire early, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Retire early, you know, which a lot of people will do. If, you know, a lot of people end up opting for Social Security at 59 and a half, or they have you know, a small military pension or, you know, some other way, and they just go ahead and retire because at least they can go ahead and continue to pay their bills in some modest way by retiring rather than being actively engaged in the workforce, which is what they would really prefer to do, both because it allows them a higher standard of living and also because people really, for the most part, don't want to give up on their life at 51 or 52 or 57. They want to continue to contribute and be actively involved in life as long as they can. And they're being culled from the herd for something that isn't their fault and that shouldn't keep them from being able to be very, very productive workers for many more years.
I want to run through these because we're short on time, but you go bankrupt if you have serious medical conditions.
You got to go bankrupt if you want to get Medicaid. So if you do have a serious medical condition, literally the counselors in hospitals will say you have to go bankrupt. And they say, you know, people say, why would I go bankrupt? And the answer is because that's the only way that the government is going to pay your medical insurance. You can, you know, you can get a job at a convenience store as long as there's no benefits. There's all kinds of those jobs, you know, temporary data input jobs, working for a temporary service. You know, you're going to be a great employee, and as long as they
with
can,
no benefits, as long as they don't have to pay you benefits,
right?
Then you could possibly get a job.
And then, of course, or, you know what I've chosen, and what a lot of people do is you become a consultant, you become an independent contractor, you become, you know, I'm a realtor, and I, you know, I've done okay now, but it's kind of a joke, you know, the 50-year-old consultant, because what you know is that they're no longer able to be hired by a normal company, so they're out there sharing their experience. In some cases, they're, you know, they do quite well, but again, they're still left with the inability to get the health care insurance they need, and they're still out there going, geez, I just hope I can make it till 65 when I get Medicare. And then, you know, you go live on the street. Actually, the New York Times had an article in 2006 that said an ever-increasing percentage of the street people are between 55 and 65. And then, of course, the other one, which is a great one, is you can go get married to someone who still has health care so that you can get access to their health care coverage. So those are kind of your options.
Yep. Okay, so those are your options. We have to take a break because we're coming to the bottom of the hour. On the other side, we'll talk about problems without a public option, what will happen as we go forward, and then... Again, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow with a public option. Wow, we can actually, maybe those of us who are approaching those middle life years actually can continue to have a productive life. But that's the only way it'll happen with a public option. We'll take a break. Come back with Steve Korek here on Air America Radio. During the break, if you want to check out the article, there's a link to it from RadioOrNot.com and from my page at AirAmerica.com. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
All right. We are talking health care tonight. It's been a whirlwind day for me, first finding out that my daughter's health insurance was canceled 6 months ago. Nice of them to let me know. They really didn't. I found out purely by accident. And then reading Steve Korek's piece today on BuzzFlash.com that's entitled 50-Year-Olds Are Unemployable Without a Public Option. All the more reason why we need one. So Steve has joined me, thankfully, from Montana, where he's now working. He's self-employed. So, Steve, once you decided to go the self-employed route, you had to then find your own health insurance company, which is not easy to do, even as a small businessman, right?
Well, it's really tough. And, you know, in a smaller state, there aren't very many options. We don't have very many healthcare companies who cover folks here in Montana. I'd had healthcare insurance continuously for many, many years, and I came out here and immediately got canceled by my own healthcare company, even though I was just switching from another state. And it took me a long time to find something, and I have something that's, you know, it's not that great, but it gives me kind of basic coverage, and, you know, as long as I don't have a really major medical problem, I'll be okay. But I know a lot of people who haven't been able to find those who, you know, are still in pretty good health, but it just becomes, you know, almost impossible to be able to afford that. I mean, heck, one of the things is that right now, the average cost for a company to insure a family of four is about $12,000 a year, whereas the average annual wage for a minimum wage worker is just a little over $10,000. So, you know, we are skewed to the point where health care costs a company more than all the wages that they pay to a worker, a minimum wage worker, for a year. There's something wrong with the system, and it says that not only is it not working for workers and people who need health care, but it's certainly not working for corporate America. And I kind of wonder when they're going to finally realize that they're really on the other side of the equation now, that they need to find a way to work with the government and work with the public to create options that support everybody. We're paying half again as much as any other country, Western country in the world, and we have 46 or 47 million people who are unemployed. We have wonderful health care for the rich. You know what everybody says,
yep,
is we have the best health care in the world.
Yeah,
and this is absolutely
it.
True for the top 10%. But beyond that, you know, forget it.
All right, so let's talk about the next point in your piece, problems without a public option. People like you and me, I turn 50 in November. My COBRA will run out in November. I'm screwed. If we don't have a public option, your first point here, you'll probably have to use up your pension. You know, the one you've worked all these years to save that was supposed to help you retire in comfort. Me, I don't have a, well, I guess I do, because I'll have a pension through AFTRA. But it'll be gone, right? Yeah, number two.
It'll be gone with your first health care crisis. And this is the thing that we don't realize is that one of the reasons that health care companies and pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies have such wonderful rates of return is because they're eating people's retirements. The first major health care crisis, your retirement's gone.
It's gone.
The second one, you're on public welfare and they no longer care. But basically, you know, this myth of saving for your retirement, you're saving for your first health care crisis, and that's all you're saving for. And the rest of it about, you know, retiring in Florida is just a myth for most people.
Absolutely.
And then
you go on. You quit
contributing to Social Security.
Right, you're not working anymore.
Yeah, you know, and in the old days, you know, even 25 years ago when people could kind of depend on working for an American corporation until they retired at 62 or 65, and in your mid-50s and even into your early 60s, that's when you were making your greatest contribution to Social Security, because it's when your earnings were highest and you
made
it in those very last few years before you retired, which meant that your Social Security fund was well primed to then support you into your retirement years. Now, your maximum earning year may be when you're 46 or 47 or 48, and then you're just trying to scrape through until you're 65. Well, do you think that might be one of the reasons that we're having such a terrible problem with long-term projections on Social Security solvency?
Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, the other thing is, American companies won't be able to hire you. And Lord knows, in this world economy, with all of the challenges, we don't need just gray hairs, but we need a few gray hairs to keep the train on the rails and to not make those decisions that are fueled more by testosterone and Red Bull. You know, it's like the internet boom. It was great, and everybody was 25 years old and running around, but it didn't have any kind of underpinning. And one could maybe make the same argument about the Wall Street boom, though that did seem to be run by folks who were older.
Goldman Sachs there, and they just had their own pocketbooks, and it, you know, they were looking out for their own bottom line. All right. Then you go on, and without proper and affordable medical care, your health may decline, but then again, there's always bankruptcy and Medicaid, which you addressed in the last one.
And literally all these counselors are saying, look, you got to go bankrupt because that's the only way that you can get public care. So you got cancer, you've been in a terrible wreck, doesn't matter what it is, they will tell you that you have to go bankrupt. Well, isn't that completely antithetical to what we're trying to do here, which is to establish private solvency so that people can be taken, you know, can take care of themselves into their later years? This is the, you know, then you end up going on the dole, you know, and then you're on the government welfare essentially for the rest of your life. And, you know, so you're seeking early retirement, you're going to go after some kind of minimal pension, you're going to go on medical retirement, you're going to be, you know, just get your $600 a month because you're unable to work because of some kind of medical condition. And, you know, the only thing that these are better than is they're better than the greeter's job at Walmart, which doesn't have health care either. I guess now they're starting to bring in health care. You know, 3 or 4 years ago they were counseling people to go use their health care services through the state and not providing any health care. So I guess they have frankly improved that a little bit, and that's good to see. So,
well, finally. All right, so now let's talk about if we do get a public option, a real, you know, substantial public option that will you know, as Congressman Andrews talked about in the last hour with me, where we won't have to worry about this, but pre-existing conditions don't matter anymore. Everyone is eligible. If you don't have insurance through your employer, you can immediately get it through this public option. It will be affordable. It will be based on 5% of your income. And if you're unemployed, that means 5% of your unemployment compensation. This is what's written in this bill that just came out of the House. All right, so with this, guess what? Now somebody our age will be able to be hired based on our experience and qualifications.
Absolutely.
What a concept.
What a concept. What a boon for American companies. You're able, you know, especially in what are entry-level jobs, you now have the option of getting people who are well-trained, who have a lifetime of experience, who've handled a lot of problems, who, you know, by this time in their life are no longer going out and drinking until 3 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. who probably are married or settled in a steady relationship and, you know, aren't going to be dealing with all those problems all the time, and so they tend to be good, steady workers. The analogy I use sometimes is, I used to fight fires in the woods, and there'd always be about, you know, 17 big guys with big muscles, and there'd be 3 or 4 women on the cruise, and everybody'd say, well, what are the women doing on the cruise? Well, what would happen after 12 hours of the guys throwing logs around and throwing boulders is they'd all be asleep under the trees, and the 4 women would still be at it. Digging trail. And, you know, and 12 hours later, they'd still be at it digging trail, and the guys would just be waking up. And you need both kinds of workers. You need your people who can work until 5 o'clock in the morning, but you need your steady workers, you need your people who are there every day, and you need your people who have experience to know how to get out of the way of the burning logs. And I think there's a major analogy for what corporations, that balance that corporations need.
Right.
And then beyond that, you know, you'll have fewer older employees losing their jobs. They'll be continuing to get their high pay. They'll be continuing to contribute to Social Security. They'll be continuing to buy and stimulate things in the economy. And they'll be able to retire later, which means, again, that you'll have another stress taken off Social Security.
That's right.
And, you know, and I mean, the bottom line is who wants to quit early if you're making good money and you're contributing to a company that you love and support? And that's what, you know, we're looking for is loyal employees working for a good company. And this is a way to help the companies keep those employees for more years. And, you know, beyond that, your unions can actually negotiate for what's important, which is better pay and better safety, and they don't have to negotiate for health care benefits that, frankly, do serve older workers more frequently than they do younger workers, even though younger workers, you know, when they need it, when they have the car wreck or they get cancer or whatever, they really, really need it, and it serves them to have everybody have that benefit. But as a negotiation, it's not the most effective thing for unions to be negotiating on. And, you know, and then businesses have the advantage of being able to keep their experienced people and make better, more substantial decisions. The uninsured health care costs that are paid by the government would go down. You know, hospitals could stay in business because they don't have all these unpaid bills of people who are uninsured and still need to be treated. General health of the population, of all these uninsured populations, whether it be seniors or children or, you know, people who have health care problems would get better because they could get treatment right away, and also because you wouldn't be penalized for going to a hospital to get treatment. If you have health insurance and you go in and start making claims, which is what health insurance is supposed to be for, then you become a liability to the insurance company and they go figure out some way to get rid of you. So it's kind of like you're going, it's not just, hey, I have health care and I can go to the clinic. It's, hey, I have health care, but I don't want to lose it, so I shouldn't go to the clinic. What kind of an insane catch-22 situation is that? And workman's compensation costs would go down because a lot of them are health related.
Right.
And, you know, more money would be available for banks to loan because people wouldn't be burning through their pensions on paying medical bills. Bankruptcies would go down. 50% of all bankruptcies are medically related and 25% of all foreclosures are medically related.
It's unbelievable. And just if we had this public option, so much of the burden would be lifted, as you just spelled out here. It is stunning. And you wrote it beautifully and you just laid it all out there. And again, that's why I thank you so much for writing this. Steve Corrick is with us. You know what? Let's take a break. We've got a couple of people on the line who want to chime in. So we'll take a break, come back in the last segment and take your phone calls. 866-303-2270. Steve's piece on BuzzFlash.com today is called 50-Year-Olds Are Unemployable Without a Public Option. But you just heard the light at the end of the tunnel. We get this through, things can change. It's not too late. I'm Nicole Sandler. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call at
866-303-2270. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
And we are back with Steve Corrick. 50-year-olds are unemployable without a public option is the name of the piece he wrote today for BuzzFlash.com. Steve, we got a few people on the line who want to chime in, so let's go right to the phones. Lorenzo in Orlando, Florida, you've been holding for quite a while. Thanks for waiting. You're on Air America with Nicole and Steve.
Hey, Lorenzo.
When the Republicans throw out the socialized argument, or insurance. Here in the state of Florida, we already have a socialized homeowners insurance market. Why are the Democrats hammering them on their hypocrisy, you know, about this whole socialized insurance?
What are you talking about? I live in Florida. Are you talking about Citizens Insurance?
Well, the state of Florida is the largest insurer of homeowners or homes in the state of Florida. And also, the state of Florida is also the reinsurance company for all of the other insurance companies. So, even if we have another hurricane and there's a lot of damage, the state of Florida is basically the one that's on the hook.
Yeah, but the state of Florida does everything bass-ackwards, you know, if you know what I mean, and they did it all wrong. And as a result of that, our homeowner rates are going to go up again this year, even after the idiot Governor Charlie Crist, who's now running for Senate, promised that he would cut both property taxes and insurance rates, and he did neither. So I wouldn't use Florida as an example because they don't do anything right here. But Lorenzo, I appreciate the call. I think socialized medicine would be the way to go. Socialized health care. Unfortunately, that's not what we're getting.
Well, Nicole, the one thing I jump in with is I think really we need to get out of the socialized versus private insurance.
That's not what this is anyway, right?
Yeah, you know, what we're looking at is how we as a society handle our medical costs. And the reality is that if we band together, as we have banded together in world wars, as we banded together to form this country, and we pool our resources and we create a mutual self-interest, we can insure every single American for two-thirds of the cost that we are using now to insure, you know, not insure 46 or 47 million Americans. And basically it ends up coming down to, the cost of the national or the percentage of national domestic product. In the United States, we spend almost 17% of our national domestic product to not insure 46 million Americans. And if you look around the world, Switzerland, which has a national medical plan, only spends 10.9% of their gross domestic product. Germany,
well,
spends
and Steve, and, it goes.
You know, they get results. They have healthy people. They don't lose their retirements, and they can work until they're 65 for two-thirds of the cost of what it costs.
Right,
us.
Because a third of the cost of every healthcare dollar we spend goes to the for-profit insurance companies for their profit and for their overhead. All right, let's go to Bernard in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Bernard, you're on Air America with Nicole and Steve.
Thank you, Lady Nicole. Wow, Glenn Miller is a bumper.
It's moon music tonight.
Yes. I am a case study. I am 52. Underinsured.
Yep.
And then the company last October 1st cut back to an even, excuse my language, crappier plan. And I had to take a 16% hourly wage cut in order to keep my current job. And it's all true, but Mr. Corrick, as you go forth in the future, please keep in mind, healthcare is just a symptom. I really think Lou Dobbs, to an extent, is correct. It is an attack on the middle class. There are those among us who would be perfectly happy if we went back to the good old days when there were just aristocrats and peasants. And they don't want a middle class, and they don't want It's so much easier to live your life if you don't have this great pool of millions of people that you could wake up one morning and all of a sudden have to work harder to keep what you have because you've got competition. Let's just go, you know, let's go ahead and destroy those people and put them down to the peasantry so we don't have to work quite as hard and we can play more golf.
Yeah. All right.
Really, it's kind of like the 60s. It surfs up again, only in the 60s, surfs was spelled S-U-R-F, and now it's spelled S-E-R-F.
Right. So. You got that right. All right, Bernard. Thank you for the call. Let's move down the street, also in Columbia, South Carolina. And Danny, hi. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Mr. Corrick. I have a dilemma. I was disabled about 16 months ago. Of course, I got fired. I'm on COBRA. I got a letter last week that says it runs out the 1st of October.
Mm-hmm.
Medicare takes 24 months to kick in, and mm-hmm. there's a clause in the brochures I've been reading, the Medicare brochures, that says I cannot have a lapse of coverage of more than 63 days.
You got that right, 63 mm-hmm. days, the magic number.
I called my insurance company, and they said, oh, no problem. We have a subsidiary that will handle your case. And I called them up, and they said, well, you have a pre-existing condition. We won't cover you.
Hey, Danny,
yeah.
Call your congressman. Call them tomorrow, first thing tomorrow. And don't let up. I mean, demand that they help you. You know, do it nicely, but that's who you need to go to right now. Steve,
well,
do you have any different advice?
You know, there's a bunch of national groups out there. National Coalition on Healthcare is a really good one. Some of the statistics I've been using tonight are with them. Democracy for America, True Majority. There's a whole bunch of different organizations that are lobbying on this. And the easiest solution is to push for the joint solution for all of us, Danny, because if we get that joint solution, then everyone like you, everyone who's in their 50s who's dealing with this issue, everyone who's in their 20s and is dealing with this issue, every young family who's being broken by the fact that they have an older adult parent or relative who doesn't have health care and they're having to meet their costs is helped by this. And the way that we can get out of this is to pull together as a society and create a mutually beneficial way of dealing with the pretty much predictable health care problems that we're all going to have.
Well, I thank you. I want to tell you, I was so mad I was thinking about calling the mafia, but I couldn't find their phone number. But I appreciate
all right. Thank you. Thank you, Danny.
For an insurance company.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Steve, we've got about 30 seconds left. So, I direct everyone to buzzflash.com to read your piece. I've got it linked from my page at airamerica.com and my blog at radioornot.com. It was a pleasure talking to you tonight. Thank you so